Hey, hey, it's your girl, Carla Renata, a.k.a. The Curvy Film Critic. We are back for another episode to talk about Spider-Man. And who knows more about that than my girl, Perry Nemiroff. Stay right there.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey. Hi, everybody. It is your girl, Carla Renata, a.k.a. The Curvy Film Critic. We are back for episode 66 here at Black Hollywood Live for this last day of Pride Month. What? And we are talking about the person that I got so much pride for, Spider-Man. And Perry Nemiroff from Collider is here to join me in that conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. Your energy, it is just infectious. I can't handle it right now.
Oh, girl, you a funny down. But tell, for people that aren't familiar with Collider,
yep.
For people that aren't familiar with the Perry Nemiroff,
yes.
Tell them who you are, what you do, and what's going on with you.
So Collider is the Collider Video YouTube channel and also Collider.com. And I've been working there for, I think, 5 years now, full time. And then I freelanced 2 years before, and it's been a very long journey, and I have my own YouTube channel now. Basically, any opportunity I can get to cover something TV or movie related, I'm going to go do it.
You're all about it. And you do movie talk, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
And
I
that comes
the
on
host.
How often? I know. You're the host
you're the
new
Collider
host.
Movie
new
Talk
host,
now.
New show.
Oh, it's crazy.
And how many times a week do y'all do that?
We are live 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, so I wanted to get all of that in right at the top,
I
and we'll remind people
that.
Again at the bottom. I want to thank my people in the chat room, Ray and Jenna James and Sae. I think that's how you pronounce it, Sae. If I mispronounce it, please tell me, because I hate mispronouncing people's names. I hate when people do that to me. I've been called Carly. I've been called Corinthia. Child, you'd be surprised some of the names I've been called.
Carla? What?
Yeah, Carla is like the easiest name ever. Carla, like, but whatever. So, for those of you just joining us here at Black Hollywood Live, if you've never been here before with the Curvy Critic, this is how it goes down. I have a guest host that comes in. We talk about whatever the hot movie is for that week. We break it down. We talk about some news. We give y'all some love. And that's pretty much it. But until we get into the conversation, go over to that YouTube channel and give me some thumbs up. Let me know that y'all like what we're doing over here, that I got it all going on, and give me some love over at iTunes and Spotify. Give me them 5 stars. Don't be giving me anything less than 5, because I'm gonna feel some kind of way about that, okay? Alrighty then. So I think you saw yesterday, right?
That I did.
Okay.
So I saw yesterday.
Okay, you're hilarious.
For real.
So let's talk about yesterday. It's directed by Danny Boyle.
Yep.
It's produced by Universal Pictures. And this is what I feel about yesterday. I felt like yesterday, it's interesting that all of a sudden Hollywood is coming out with these movies featuring these songs by these really iconic rock groups or personalities. We had Rocket Man earlier this year, you know, based on Elton John's life, which was kind of, it was kind of La La Land-ish. Rocket Man was
a little
for
fantasy
me.
Quality to it.
Yeah. And then we had Bohemian Rhapsody, which Rami Malek won the Oscar for that. And now we got Yesterday, where this young Indian musician, or just a young musician, he is at this crossroads in his career where his career's not really happening. Like, he's playing these dive bars and he's waiting for that big break and it's just not coming, and then he gets hit by this bike, and all of a sudden he's in a world where nobody knows who the Rolling Stones or the Beatles are. So he steals the Beatles music literally and passes it off as his own, and he becomes this global superstar. Now this is how I feel about that. It's light, it's fluffy, it's fun. It's like a really nice feel-good movie. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and it's really cute. And not for nothing, but it's kind of refreshing to hear the Beatles music in a narrative film, right?
Have you ever seen Across the Universe?
I have not seen Across the Universe.
I know it's not widely beloved, but I adore
it's
that
been
movie.
A minute since
Jim
I've seen
Sturgis
it.
Is so good in that. And the second I walked out of yesterday, I did want to go home and put
Across
on Across the Universe again. Ah. I've seen that movie too many times, but I kind of echo what you just said with this one. It's very, very charming. It's very, very light and fun. And it's, you know, it's kind of a wish fulfillment kind of scenario. Because really, let's say that I got hit by a bus and I woke up and then something super, like, what if my favorite film had never been made? What if Jurassic Park had never been written or
made?
Oh, my
God. I just knew you would go find a way to bring Jurassic Park into the conversation.
Just wait. Scream will come up at some point as well. But would I go out there and try to write that script? Yes, I would.
Okay. They're in the chat room, girl. They're calling it plagiarism the movie.
It is a little bit. And for that reason, it's almost like this whole concept kind of writes the paints the movie into a corner, if you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. where there almost is no, there is a satisfying conclusion, but it doesn't necessarily address the bad behavior that's inherent with something like this, which is probably the biggest problem I found in the entire movie. But
I agree with you on
that. It doesn't take away from the enjoyment and how happy I felt when mm-hmm. I left.
Yeah, I agree with that. It doesn't take away from the enjoyment, but it is kind of, and you know what I thought was weird? Now, I don't know if this was weird for you. And I'm sorry, y'all, but this is not a spoiler-free review of this movie. So if you haven't seen it,
Oh, that's good to know.
Oh, well. This is what I found disturbing. At the end, where he runs into the John Lennon-ish character, and he's, like, living on a farm. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, I found that a little strange, too.
That was odd, right?
I think I might need to rewatch the movie and try to just focus on that scene, because I couldn't really put together what the value of that scene was for the entire thing. I think the part that hit me the most, now that we're talking about spoilers, is when those other two individuals who knew who the Beatles were showed up, because
yes.
that was one part of the movie that really exceeded my expectations. I was sure they were just going to blow up his spot.
Me
and
too.
Get him in trouble. And
yeah.
just seeing people, because this is another reason why Bohemian Rhapsody got me as much as it did. It's because the Live Aid stuff at the end, and in this particular scene, you see how important something like as simple as music is to so many people, how those songs brought all those people together, and how him recreating those songs that technically didn't exist in their new existence,
mm-hmm.
now they are so thankful for that. And I found that part really special and charming. It's just like, once you hit that point, where do you go from there?
Yeah, it was kind of odd. And then Kate McKinnon playing like the crazy, eccentric,
yeah.
money-hungry manager. She was
hit and miss.
Yeah, it was kind of like there were some scenes where I really liked her, and there were some scenes where I was like,
Yeah, and I can't even put a finger on what worked and what didn't, because it was pretty much the same level mm-hmm. of, you know, snark and camp throughout. But it's just some jokes were funny, and then some were like, whoa, you feel like you're at a 12 when everybody else is at a 10.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it was for me. It felt like she was doing a different movie than everybody else. It was just weird. And I love her.
Mm-hmm.
I love her to death. But it was a little odd to me. And I was like, but that didn't stop me from liking the movie. I liked the movie. I thought it was a really great movie, but except for those few little things.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see that we were eye to eye on that.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I was interested to know how you felt about it. I'm like, oh, I bet Perry gonna think the opposite of me. And this is going to be a whole discussion and I'm going to be
like
all upset.
That's my kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as much as I do love, you know, super deep and thoughtful and scary things, of course, I kind of need that kind of movie in my life every once in a while. Something about someone just embracing a passion or a dream or something along those lines. It's a motivational thing. It just brightens my day.
I agree. Speaking of inciting a dream and passion and brightening and carrying it on, I did a, I just want to interject in between the spot before we get into our Spider-Man introspective. Oh, I'm so excited. I interviewed this director named Sophie Huber. And Sophie Huber is the director of a documentary called Blue Note Records Beyond the Notes. And it is a love letter to jazz aficionados. If you are a big jazz enthusiast, you are going to love this documentary, because the story of Blue Note Records is told through the eyes, through the mouths, through the stories of all the jazz recording greats that were on that label. People like Herbie Hancock, people like Wayne Shorter, people like Terrace Martin. So I interviewed Terrace and Sophie. We had a nice long conversation, and it was really long, so I didn't want to take up time with you here to air that interview, but it will air on the site at some point later on this week. But I just want to give a big high five, ups to that. That documentary is also important because a lot of people don't realize, when people hear jazz, they think of people snapping their fingers and being like all ethereal and, you know, uber cool and all that. But the reality is, jazz music is fused from bebop music and hip hop music. It's all the same. It's kind of music from the hood. I mean, at the end of the day, it's music from the hood. Jazz is music from the hood. And people nowadays try to act like, you know, there are some jazz enthusiasts that act like it's opera. Like, they're so highfalutin with it that they're like, oh, jazz. I'm like, no, child, it is music from the hood. It expresses the angst and the pain and all that uneasiness that happens in the hood that people can't get out verbally because of the fear of being arrested or worse. So they put it in that music. And also it comes out of the fact that there was a point in America, and I didn't realize this when I was watching the doc, there was a point in America where the reason jazz and hip-hop and bebop and all that stuff became so popular is particularly in the hip-hop era, the government took instruments out of school. They took the instruments out of school so you couldn't learn. I learned how to play an instrument in high school.
So did I.
Right. So they took that out of the school system. That was just like they took music out of the school at some point. You don't have choir. You don't have all those music programs available in public schools anymore. So they took the instrumental courses out of the public school system, and that's when you started hearing people on the corners beatboxing and all that. So that's how hip-hop kind of infused. I was like, oh, did not know that. That was good to know. So check it out. It's called Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes. It's directed by Sophie Huber. She didn't get one dime from America, as she liked to tell me. It's from Mira Films, which is her film company, and it's in theaters now. I think it's only playing in New York and L.A., but you might want to check it out. It's really, really lovely and exciting and enjoyable. Now, let's get into the Spider-Man. crack neck. So I thought what we would do is we would start at the top and go down. I'm not going to mention all the Spider-Man movies because, child, we'd be here until sometime next week.
We would.
But I wanted to start out with the Spider-Man trilogy because I thought it was interesting that they started out with one. They kept switching up the Spider-Man. And I was like, I didn't see anything wrong with Tobey Maguire. I didn't see anything wrong with Andrew Garfield. I didn't see nothing wrong with Tom Holland, who's the current one. But in 2002, they started out with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst. And, you know what I found was interesting about that is that, remember Bill Nunn?
Who?
Bill Nunn.
I don't think so.
Bill Nunn is in this movie as well. Okay. And Bill Nunn was Radio Raheem in Do the Right Thing, which is celebrating his 30th anniversary today. But I was like, oh, Bill Nunn, I kind of miss him. He was in Sister Act. He was Radio Raheem.
How could I forget that in Sister Act?
He was Radio Raheem and Do the Right Things. Yeah, so I was like, oh, wow, he was in it. Cliff Robertson is in it. He's no longer with us. Rosemary Harris. I'm not sure if Rosemary Harris is gone, but I think she might be. I don't want to say she is and if she's still living because that would really suck. But she's in it, and they played his grandparents. But I kind of liked when Tobey Maguire came on the scene as Spider-Man because it was for each one of the young men that's playing it, probably the exception being Tom Holland, it was a departure from anything else they'd ever done. None of them had been a superhero. None of them had been in that genre of film. So it was kind of really outside of their realm to do it.
Yeah.
What do you feel about that first
one? It was also because superhero movies were in a much different place back then. If it wasn't for the earlier X-Men movies and then also the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, I don't know if I would be the same movie fan I am today. Because
really?
I think probably the first Spider-Man movie that he did was the first superhero movie that I got. No, that's a lie because I also had Batman. I was addicted to Batman Returns as a kid. I saw that movie when I was way too young.
Batman.
But I think it was not the first Spider-Man, but the second one was the first midnight screening I ever went to. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget the kind of energy. It reminds me a little bit of the first time I ever attended San Diego Comic-Con. And it's just the first time you step onto that property and you feel the fact that you are surrounded by people who all love the same property so, so much. And that's basically the memory that I associate with whenever I think about the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. But I'm also a big fan of all three actors as Spider-Man. It's just unfortunate that in Andrew Garfield's case, those movies I don't think lived up to his performance, in particular the second one, which was a shame.
I loved Andrew Garfield as... I just loved him as Spider-Man.
He cared so much, too. I'll never forget, speaking of Comic-Con, when he was at Comic-Con promoting that movie, it's just, you could look at him, you could listen to him, and you knew, like, down to his deepest core that he really wanted to do that character justice.
I think he's one of Hollywood's most underrated actors. I think he's really brilliant, and he does some really solid work all the time.
I may interrupt as well, I'd actually agree with you, Carlos. This is Josh in the booth. I'd actually agree. I feel like Andrew Garfield is the most underrated out of the three of the Spider-Man, because his performances were just so much more, I guess for a lack of a better term, more angstier and more brooding. It just felt a little more realistic compared to the three. That's how I feel about that.
I'm not mad at you. I agree. Not for nothing, but, you know, I could have been the major cougar with some Andrew Garfield, because I was all about some Andrew Garfield. I was so a side note, and this has nothing to do with Spider-Man or the movie, but it has to do with Andrew Garfield. So there's a girlfriend of mine named Yvette Nicole Brown, and she was on the red carpet one year doing the Golden Globes before the pre-award show carpet, mm-hmm. right? And Andrew Garfield was flirting with her. She was interviewing him, and he was flirting with her. I was like, oh, Andrew Garfield likes chocolate. Okay, that's good to know. And so I texted her. I was like, I think he's kind of digging on you. She's like, no. He's like, I'm like, yeah, okay, right. So then afterwards, we got together afterwards, like maybe a couple of weeks or a month or so after the fact. And she said that inside at the party, he was totally kind of like giving her the eye. And I was like, girl, did you get those? Did you get the digits? But did you get the digits? And she was like, no. But that made me laugh so hard, because I was like, look, he better be glad it wasn't me. That's all I got to say. He just better be glad that I wasn't on the carpet and that Yvette was there.
You tell her I'm jealous next time you see her.
I will, because I was like, what is happening? I was so excited. It was so funny. Oh, wait, let me stop talking about him, because I'm like, my face is about to turn around. I'm starting to look like Rudolph in 2 seconds. All right. So then that brings us into the last one, oh my God, the one with Tom Holland. Spider-Man Homecoming with my little nugget Zendaya. So side note again, I was on a show called Shake It Up, and I played Zendaya's mother on Shake It Up.
You didn't know that?
Yeah.
Now you make me want to go watch them Shake It Up.
Girl, I am all over Shake It Up. I played her mom on Shake It Up, and that was her first big gig. Shake It Up was her first big gig, but oh my goodness, she has blossomed and grown and evolved so much from the Shake It Up days. She's been on the cover of Vogue. She's been in the Lemonade videos with Beyonce. She's got her own fashion line. She's walked the runways of Paris. I mean,
And it all began with you.
It all started with me on TV, but I just was like, I'm really proud of her, because so many of those children on those Disney shows, they go into oblivion. You never hear from them again. And if you do hear from them, they're drugged out. They're doing crazy stuff. Like my little nugget Bella, bless her heart, she's just doing crazy stuff, and that's usually the types of things that you hear about Disney kids when the shows go away. So I was glad that Zendaya did not fall into that peril of that particular lane of being like that whatever happened to, mm-hmm. and it's just all kinds of drama. But to her credit, her parents are really lovely people, and there's no way that they were going to let her go down
like
that.
It's so nice hearing that. You can tell, because you know how many junket interviews I do, mm-hmm. and you know when you could just tell when someone is genuinely down-to-earth, kind, fun-loving. Everything, I've never interviewed her before, but everything I watch of hers, I'm like, I bet you anything we could just hang. Like, you're just super cool and nice, aren't you?
She's really sweet. She's very earnest, and everything she does, she just wants to do the best that she can. She just really wants to do the best. She's not one of those dolls that will do stuff for the sake of bragging rights or for the sake of going, yeah, I worked with this director and I did this and I did that. Like, she really wants to do it because it's fun for her. I remember toward the end of Shake It Up, we were having a discussion, and I said, Shake It Up's going to come to an end at some point. What do you want to do when this is over? And she was kind of like, I don't know. And I was like, no, seriously, what do you want to do? And she may have said something about she wanted to have her own show and direct or produce her own show or something. I'm like, then do that. And she did, because the next show she did was Casey Undercover, and she was the executive producer of it, and she was starring in it. And that was it. And now she's on Euphoria on HBO.
That's something I'm rooting for all the time with her and beyond, because you just see so many people people right now that are not just getting the next big acting gig, but they're using that star power that they're earning to actually swing that weight around and create new opportunities for new people or for themselves that they can't get. And just the amount of projects I've seen that happen with this year in particular, that is a very, very good sign.
Yeah, and she did have a little bit of drama. So they were going to do a movie about, there was a young recording artist that passed away unexpectedly named Aaliyah. And they were going to do, or they did rather, a TV movie about her. Mm-hmm. And I think Zendaya was attached to play Aaliyah in this movie. And people had a nervous breakdown because Zendaya is very fair skin in her tone. And Aaliyah was a little more brown skin. And they were like, yeah, no. Why mm-hmm. is, it's the same reaction people had when Zoe Saldana was saying she was going to play Nina Simone. Now, Zoe Saldana playing Nina Simone, that's a horse of a whole different color. But, you know, Zendaya playing Aaliyah, it wasn't that bad, but mm-hmm. folk had a nervous breakdown. But to Zendaya's credit, Zendaya was like, look, I understand. She went on Twitter and was like, look, I understand how y'all feel. I will step down and let someone that you feel will best represent your icon in the way that you feel she should be honored. Mm. Which was really classy, because she could have clapped back and said all kind of crazy stuff, but she didn't.
And I can't even imagine how young she probably was when that happened.
This was like a couple of years ago.
How old is she now? Is she mid-20s?
I think she just turned 21.
It's just like at 21 or a couple years prior, it's like when I was that age, I can't imagine being that adult that I would behave like that and actually handle it responsibly.
Yeah, I would have been clapping back. I would have had my fingers like this going, yeah, and I would have just acted a fool. So kudos and big ups to her for handling herself with such grace and humility and maturity in that situation. So now, they did the Spider-Man Homecoming. That was huge.
Yes.
Big thing. And not for nothing, but in Spider-Man Homecoming, Zendaya also broke, reinvented the role of MJ. Because MJ, before that, was Emma Stone. Mm-hmm. It was Kirsten Dunst. And now it's Zendaya, who's a biracial woman in Hollywood. So mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. They never say she's biracial. They never allude to the fact that she's black. They don't treat her like she's white. She's just MJ.
Mm-hmm.
And that is huge, huge in a superhero, in a superhero film. Because usually, and not for nothing, usually if somebody is in a superhero film, they got a lot of mouth, they popping off, or they're the villain. They're not the heroine of the film. Never. Ever, 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 as far as I know. I don't think I've ever recalled seeing that. So the fact that she's the heroine of the film, she's the lead in the film, her leading man is Tom Holland, and they look kind of cute together.
Yeah, they're perfect together.
I'm loving that.
And that's another thing that is so great about the two of them, and just the fact that I think the two of them are just good human beings beyond just being good actors. I think you get that vibe from that entire cast, and you see it a lot in Far From Home, because mm-hmm. Far From Home is also about like the whole class going on a school trip, and the fact that you could just feel that energy, that friendly energy,
mm-hmm.
it brings you right back to your high school days,
yes.
and it makes you long for that feeling to go away with your classmates.
Yes, and the other thing, in between the Homecoming and the Far Away From Home, they introduced Spider-Man into the Avengers universe, which mm-hmm. was a whole different thing. I'm like, ooh, Tom Holland is getting some ducats right about now. He is making some cash.
Yeah. The way they introduced him into
awesome.
This franchise was, I will never forget our first look when they revealed that very first image of mm-hmm. him. And at first, too, when we saw the Civil War trailer and I saw his eyes move, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. That wasn't like the Spider-Man that I had seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And the second we saw Civil War, I fell head over heels for his version of Spider-Man. And then John Watts did it justice in Homecoming and yet again in Far From Home.
All right. Well, I didn't get a chance to see Far From Home yet because I had a family tragedy that I was dealing with that prevented me from that. But you saw it, so I want to know what you thought.
I did. I'm so excited for you to finally see it because it's yet another great installment of the MCU in 2019. They're having a huge year, and I would be really bummed that we're not going to see another Marvel movie for roughly a year now, but they gave me so much good content. And the cool thing about Spider-Man Far From Home isn't just the fact that it's, you know, it's a well-done Marvel movie. John Watts brings a real style to it. I mean, think about what we have in Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio and his abilities, especially if you know the comics and what he could be capable mm-hmm. of. It's not just about simply getting him on screen and getting the job done. John Watts takes that extra step forward, and there are a couple of fight sequences in this movie that I can honestly say I've never quite seen anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Holland is just the ultimate charmer in this role. So if you go into your superhero movies and you want, you know, a fun, like, wild adventure, you know, a popcorn summer kind of flick, this movie delivers on that. But it's also key to Spider-Man's growth, to Peter Parker's growth after the death of, sorry for Endgame spoilers if you haven't seen it, but you're probably...
Right, you're probably a little late on that one.
You should probably see Endgame before you see Far From Home. But it's also about how he's coping with Tony Stark's death, and not just the loss of a father figure and a mentor, but also the pressure that's being put on him to fill Iron Man's shoes. So this is a great wild ride, and it never loses that coming-of-age charm, but it also has the added depth of a significant piece of the Peter Parker character journey that I hope John Watts will get to continue in another movie.
Ooh, did they, not to spoil it, but was there, you know, usually at the end of those Marvel movies, there's always, you know, you have to sit through the credits and then there's like a little nugget at the end.
Do not leave before the very, very end. I actually think the pairing of end credit scenes in this particular movie might be the best I've ever seen in the MCU.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
There's some big stuff that made me very, very happy.
Ooh, yeah. I can't wait to see it.
I mean, big possibilities. It's not even just about, you know, throwing you a bone to make sure you spend your money on the next movie, because, you know, it's a marketing tool. It is that at its core. But it's just, it introduces some meaty things that suggest to me that Phase 4 is going to be more than the continuation of a money-making franchise, but that it's going to have some real depth to all the characters.
Wow. See, this is why I had Perry come, because, you know, Perry know how to break down a movie in a way that, you know, just makes you want to go see the movie.
All day, every day.
But has you thinking, like, didn't think of that. And the way, this is the thing that I really admire about you. You're one of those people that you very eloquently state how you feel about a film. You're not stumbling and stammering, because I'd be stumbling and stammering my behind off. But you're just
say
like
that.
No. But you are so eloquent when you talk about a film. It's very eloquent. It's very well stated. It's very well thought out. Like, if I didn't know any better, you don't have no notes in front of you. I got computers, phones. I'm like looking and talking and typing, and you're like, yes. And I'm like, okay.
If only you knew how many times I would call my mother after recording an episode of movie talk and say to her, like, I was just stumbling and stuttering all over the place. I couldn't get my read down. I don't think I made my point clearly enough.
You always make your point, girl, please.
Thank you, Carla.
You always make your point. And not for nothing, but you guys, Perry and I are on a show that is on Facebook called You Know That Scene. So basically what it is it's a series that has been developed by Focus Features, and Focus Features is under the Universal Pictures titles. So what we do is we take a film that is either a Universal Pictures title or a Focus Features title, and we talk about different scenes in the movie, and we always start the sentence with, you know that scene where blah, 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 blah. And that's what we do. And it's myself and Perry and Gray Drake and a couple of other people whose names I can't remember right now, which is really bad. But sorry, y'all, but go check it out. It's on Facebook, and we got two episodes up now, and we got a couple of other episodes that are coming up centered around the movie Harriet and the upcoming Downton Abbey feature. So be on the lookout for those. But Perry and I do that together, and we have a lot of fun.
You know, it's still one of the best movies of the year, The Mustang.
Okay, let's just sidebar. Let's just talk about that for a second, because I was so sad about what happened. I think I talked about this last week. I was so sad about what happened with Jason Mitchell, because whenever I would see him,
I know.
One of my favorites to interview.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, dude,
it's always
really?
Such a shame to hear about things like that. And like, especially because, you know, we're always having that conversation. When you hear about things like that, do you take away a movie and a performance of his that you loved and might have brought some joy to your life? And it's a very difficult thing to discuss and a very difficult line to draw.
It really is. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the film was fantastic.
Oh, that movie. We all loved it. Matthias Schoenaerts?
Yes.
Get him that Oscar nomination.
Oh, my God. He was so good. So good. So good. So good. It was awesome. And that director was good, too. Mm-hmm. The way she directed that film with those horses and everything.
I wish I could say her name. Lorraine. And then
Lorraine de Clermont.
Thank you.
That was it.
Thank you. She's something else. And it was a first feature, too. A first feature, and that's what she delivers.
She freaking slayed it. Oh. I interviewed her, too. She was lovely.
Oh, I interviewed Matthias at Sundance, and I wanted to get to the whole cast, but
I got both
missed that window.
I got Lorraine and Matthias together. Oh, that was awesome. I was like, what is happening? What is my life right now? I was so excited. But yeah, so let's hop over to the chat room, because I have neglected them. Usually I'd be typing and talking, but
I'm impressed that you can do that.
I really can. I can't do it with you because I'm engaged talking to you. But let's see here. Michael B. Let me just shout some folk out. So, hey, Jenna. Hi, Michael B. You didn't miss a whole lot when you came in, Michael B. We started about 10 minutes before you got in. Let's see. Yes, I was Zendaya's mom on Shake It Up. Side note, another Shake It Up alum had a movie this weekend, too, Rashawn. Oh, yeah, Rashawn played my son. Rashawn and Zendaya played my son. Zendaya played my daughter, and Rashawn played my son. And Rashawn was on, was it Greenleaf? I think Rashawn was on Greenleaf on the OWN channel. I was so upset. I was really kind of upset because he was playing a really mean, not so lovely, wonderful character. I felt some kind of way about that. I'm like, why is my baby up there being mean to women? I'm not having that.
It's very difficult to separate the person you know from the role sometimes.
I was not having that. I saw him in public. I'm like, Rashawn. And he was like, I know, Mom. It was terrible. It was hilarious. Someone said, I saw an interview that said Jake Gyllenhaal almost replaced Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 2. I think I saw that, too. That was a while ago. Yeah, I think
he would have made a great Spider-Man 2 back then.
He would have been good, but, yeah, I ain't feeling him. I like Tobey Maguire. And then somebody said, I'm glad that didn't happen.
He's a great Mysterio anyway. Better off that they waited.
They want to know, is there an upside-down kiss in this film?
No.
No.
Is that a spoiler that there's not?
No.
I don't know.
No. Like, it's a kiss. Who cares?
I'm so hyper-concerned about spoilers at all times.
Yeah, don't be concerned about that here. We don't care. Technically, that would have been the second father figure that died for Peter. Oh, right. You're absolutely right about that. And then Jenna said, wow, Perry, even more than Endgame? I forget where that came in from.
Endgame is my favorite movie of 2019 so far. So yeah. Far From Home after one viewing still ranks behind it, but who knows what happens after you see a movie multiple times.
Okay, and then Chanel, I'm going to call you Chanel's because channels just sounds way too wrong, so I'm going to call you Chanel's. yes, Peter has some serious father figure losses. Woof, yeah, he did. Poor baby. And they got jokes. So they were like, yeah, that's true. Contract negotiations on the ropes at that time. They got jokes. I'm like, y'all got jokes. Y'all are funny. is Tobey Maguire in this movie? He's not, is he? No, child, he's not in this movie. He was Spider-Man. Why would the first Spider-Man be in the Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland? That's just weird. Y'all got jokes. Okay, anyway.
I like the idea of them doing something fun and, like, I don't know, even for a sketch or something, bringing all the Spider-Men together.
Maybe they'll do that when Shameik they do, like,
included,
the last one.
Because Spider-Verse is
right?
something special.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I love that
and
movie.
And it won an Oscar, so that was awesome.
It needed that Oscar. The second I saw that movie, and I was a big fan of Incredibles 2, but the second I saw Into the Spider-Verse, I said to myself...
they got it.
Because, you know, I track a lot of box office. I'm obsessed with box office, and usually box office and Oscars can correlate, especially when it comes to, you know, like a movie like The Martian. The Martian, no one's thinking when it's coming out, that's going to win an Oscar or even get nominated for that matter. And then it makes a ton of money, and that ensures that the widest audience sees it, so it ups its chances. But when Spider-Verse was coming out, the numbers seemed a little too low to me, and I'm like, uh-oh, I hope it doesn't get overlooked. And then I finally saw it, and I'm like, you do not let that get overlooked.
Yeah,
that
film was awesome, and not for nothing, but they had an African-American as one of the helms of the film,
Peter Ramsey.
Yeah, I'm like, come on now, Peter Ramsey. Now Peter Ramsey got the Oscar. I was excited. I saw him and talked to him a lot during the award
He's
season.
He's wonderful.
He's a really lovely
all
man.
All three directors were
awesome.
I mean, such a treat and pleasure.
Yeah.
And Phil Lord and Chris Miller, too. They
yeah,
were
every,
such a
everybody
delight.
Associated with that title was really, really lovely.
Brian Tyree Henry has my heart forever. He's wonderful.
That is my boy. But everybody associated with that film was lovely. They all wanted to be there. They were all excited about the work. They were all excited for everybody to see the work that they had been working on for a couple of years, and it all paid off for everybody. So kudos and congratulations to all of them. Let me finish shouting some folk out. I said Jenna. Hey, Yasna. How you doing, Mama? Chanel's. I just like saying your name. Chanel's. Mr. Ducksoft. Steve Calderon.
Hey, Steve. I know that name.
That's your person, huh?
Yeah. Steve's a big fan of Collider.
He says Avengers Endgame is 27 million away to beat Avatar. Oh.
So close.
Wow. That's...
I went really big with my box office predictions. I decided to just take a huge swing to spice it up a little, so I'm like 9 million for the re-release. I think it came in just under 6, but.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining. Thank you, Steve Calderon, for coming over and supporting my girl Perry from Collider. You can come over here and support me, too, because I'm not on when she's on. So you can come and watch The Curvy Critic. I'm just saying. Give me a thumbs up. Why don't you? So let's talk about a little news. I saw in the news this week that Bill and Ted is coming back.
Oh, yeah.
They're coming back with, what is it called this time? Last time it was called Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure. Mm-hmm. And this time it's called Bill and Ted's Journey, I think.
Did they come up with an official subtitle yet?
Yeah, it's called Music. Music something.
What you are saying is right.
Bill and Ted.
It's escaping me now.
It is me
I feel
too.
Like my brain is automatically turned to mush whenever anything referencing Keanu Reeves comes up.
So it's Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Yes, Face the Music. It. Yes, thank you, Josh. I was like, I know there's some music in there somewhere, and I thought I had written it down, but oops,
my bad.
Oh, and
they just cast the daughters. Samara Weaving is one of them, isn't
it? Yes,
she is so good. Yeah. If you do not know who that is, you should be watching Ash vs. Evil Dead. Sadly, that show's over, but all three seasons were phenomenal, and she's at the end of season one. And then she's also in this movie with Stephen Young called Mayhem, mm-hmm. and that movie is wild. And am I allowed to say a curse word here or no?
Yeah, nice
she,
stuff out.
She kicks ass in that movie, like so much ass.
Cool. And they just added two new people to the cast, Amy Stoch and Hal Landon Jr., and Beck Bennett from SNL is coming on board. So that's some new news about Bill and Ted. I'm also really excited about this. I'm really glad that people went to social media and expressed their discontent over One Day at a Time being canceled. Because I'm like, One Day at a Time is a really good show. So you're going to cancel One Day at a Time and you're going to keep all this other like mediocre mess on TV or in streaming services? I don't think so. But thank goodness somebody listened. So they're gone from Netflix and now they're over at Pop. So
I still need to watch. I've only heard the best things though. Yeah.
It's really good.
There's just so much content right now.
I know there's a lot of content streaming. But for those of you that don't know what One Day at a Time is, it's a resurrected sitcom by Norman Lear, that in the 70s it was done with a single mom and her two daughters, and it was an all white cast. This time it's with an all Latino cast, and it's really funny and it's really good and it's really relevant. You know, Norman Lear and what's the other guy's name? The Jeffersons dude. Oh Lord, what is his name? It escapes me. Anyway, the man who wrote The Jeffersons and All in the Family and all those shows, those two men that wrote those types of shows, they were edgy for its time. And it's really funny because now they brought them back and they're still timeless. They're still relevant now. And it's been 30, 40 years mm-hmm. later. So that's not for nothing. But congratulations, mm-hmm. One Day at a Time. We're glad that you're back. The Charlie's Angel trailer dropped this week. I was like, I cannot wait to see what Perry has to say about this Charlie's Angels trailer.
It didn't even matter. I'm sold on this movie no matter what. I love Charlie's Angels. I'm a huge fan of Kristen Stewart. She can do no wrong in my eyes. It's just, you know, I watch a trailer like this, and it's the first trailer for the movie, and I cue it up, and it's something like, it's over 2 minutes and 30 seconds, which is way too long. And it's not a teaser. You have the opportunity to kick off your marketing campaign with something that really, like, gets you going and gets you excited to see more of what this new world is, and instead mm-hmm. this feels like a mishmash of like famous face, like action. The only thing that I really held on to by the end of that trailer was Naomi Scott's character, because I found that interesting, that she was going to kind of become a part of the Angels along the way. So that's what's got me hooked right now. I'm going to see it no matter what, but that trailer was a bummer.
Yeah, I agree. The trailer was a bummer. I'm going to see it no matter what because Elizabeth Banks is directing it, and this is what I'll say about the Charlie's Angels franchise. They always get whoever the three hottest young women are at the time. When it came out originally on television, the late Farrah Fawcett, who, you know, that was interesting because people were celebrating, I think, her death and Michael mm-hmm. Jackson's death this week. And her death totally got eclipsed because she died the same day as Michael Jackson, which kind of sucks. But that's what happened. But Farrah Fawcett and Cheryl Ladd, and I can't remember the other... I know her character's name was Sabrina. If y'all know her name, help me out. But those three, they were the most popular actress, Kate something or another. But they were the most popular actresses at the time on television. Mm-hmm. Then they rebooted it, and it was Drew Barrymore and those dolls. And they were the hottest ones at the time. Now we got Naomi Scott, and we got Kristen Stewart. So, you know.
Ella Balinska. I can't wait to see what she can do too.
She looks like she might be pretty good. I love her.
Yeah, she definitely caught my. It's like, you know, when someone has that on screen presence that it doesn't matter what's happening around them, it just draws you in. She's got that to her.
Yeah, I really loved it. But you guys, if you haven't seen the trailer, go check it out. It's on YouTube somewhere. And Charlie's Angels is going to drop on November 15th, and it's being produced by Sony Pictures.
And just to chime in the booth as well, it is Kate Jackson.
Mm. Kate Jackson. I got that name right. I knew it was Kate.
Kate Jackson, Farrah Fawcett, and Jacqueline Smith. And to answer your previous question, Norman Lear, creator of All in the Family and the Jeffersons.
Yeah, but who was the... I said Norman Lear, and who was it that... it wasn't Norman Lear that created One Day at a Time.
It was possibly Johnny Spite, maybe?
No.
No?
No, I'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. But I think, was it Norman? Maybe Norman Lear did do One Day at a Time. I don't think he did, though. But anyway, thank you, Josh. Appreciate you. Okay. That's why you make the big bucks. Oh, yes. And then they gave it to me in the chat room. They're like, Kate, Jacqueline Smith. Yeah, it was Jacqueline Smith, not Cheryl Ladd. Cheryl Ladd replaced Jacqueline Smith. That's what it was. See, I know they got jokes. So, yeah. That was that. But I was really excited to see that they're coming back. So, and of course, you know, I'm a big Spike Lee fan. I talk about Spike Lee here at Black Hollywood Live all the time. When Black Klansman was up for awards, I was like, it better win. Like, I was really, like, on one about Black Klansman and Spike Lee because I think Spike Lee is a phenomenal filmmaker. I think he's a phenomenal filmmaker because he has his pulse on the culture and he has his pulse on what's happening in the culture at the time. And he's not afraid to talk about it, write about it, mm-hmm. or make his features about it. You know, he's unapologetically Black. Spike Lee is unapologetically Black, and
he's
I love
one
that.
Of a kind too. It's like if you take any Spike Lee movie and remake it with any other director, nobody could come close to specifically what he did with those stories.
Mm-mm, no, but they're celebrating the 30th anniversary of Do the Right Thing today, and as I mentioned earlier, Bill Nunn was in that. It was funny. There are a lot of people that were in Spike Lee films that are now mega superstars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Wesley Snipes got his start in Spike Lee films. Denzel Washington got his start in Spike Lee films. Rosie Perez was in Do the Right Thing, and then she went on to do the choreography and stuff for In Living Color. So many people were in his movies that are now huge, huge, huge stars. So he knows talent when he sees it. And I just want to, you know, give my brother some love. And they culminated with having a big block party in Brooklyn. So right now, as we speak, they are on a block in Brooklyn getting their party on.
I wish I could be there.
Dancing to Doing the Butt, probably, by EU. Because that was the song when he had School Days out. That was the big hit from that. But every year, I am somewhere that is not New York City when they have these big anniversaries for his films. Hopefully one day I'll be in New York.
I'll
when
be there next
it.
Weekend. I'll miss it.
You're like, I'll miss it. But you can always go to the block and be like, hey, I'm here.
Take a picture of myself there and Photoshop myself into the event later.
Okay, you got jokes. Is there anything streaming online right now that you would want to tell people to be on the lookout for?
Streaming? Mm-hmm. Well, there's something in theaters that if it's playing by you, I can't recommend it enough. And it's called Wild Rose. I mean, we were talking earlier about the Mustang and how I'm rooting for that one to go the distance and get into the awards conversation. Jesse Buckley's performance in Wild Rose is on another level, one of the best performances I've seen all year. She is an incredible singer, a great actress, chemistry with everybody around her. If you do not know what that movie is, you should, but it's about, she plays Rosalind Harlan. She gets out of prison after spending a stint there, and she dreams of going to Nashville and becoming a famous country singer. The thing is, she has kids, and the kids stay with her mother while she's in prison, and when she gets out, she reunites with everyone, and there's this pressure for her to, you know, make a home for the kids and find a job and everything, and she can't get her old gig singing back. So it's just this juggling act she has to do with her kids and her responsibilities, but also this dream that's still very much a part of her that she wants to achieve. So it is a beautiful, beautiful story not to be missed. And whether it is Jesse Buckley getting a nomination for Best Actress, or maybe even they have one song at the end that's an original song, that if that does not get a nomination, I'm gonna be so bummed.
I'm gonna have to check. Are you going to TIFF this year?
It's looking quite positive. Yeah. Nothing's set in stone yet, so I'm afraid to officially confirm it.
Well,
but we're heading in that direction.
I will see you there, my sister.
It played at TIFF last year, you know.
I know it did, and I missed it then. Every single screening they've had for that, I've missed it for one reason or another. So hopefully they'll have one or two more before.
I think it's doing a slow rollout right now, yeah, so you never know.
I really want to see it. That was on my list, and I just couldn't get to it. So what are they telling me? They're saying that Spike Lee's going to be mad today. The Knicks didn't land. We are not talking about basketball. Basketball is not my thing. I don't care nothing about Kevin Durant. And thank you, Steve Calderon, for telling me Whitney Blake and Alan Manning's created the original One Day at a Time. Thank you for allowing me to shout them out. All right, girl. Well, that went really fast.
That did go really fast. I can't believe that's what the time is now.
I know, right? It went really, 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 really fast. I'm so happy that you were able to come over here and hang out with me. Finally,
that means we need more talk. We need more talk time. So that means you have to come on Movie Talk soon.
Well, girl, you know how to find me.
That door is wide open. You're gonna get an email soon.
Look, you know how to find me. You know where I am. You know I'm just a car ride away. I will totally come. Thank you, Perry.
Of course. Tell everybody for having me.
Of course. Tell everybody that again who's not familiar with you and has never seen you before where they can find you and what your deal is.
All right, I'm at P. Nemiroff on Twitter and Instagram. Collider Movie Talk on the Collider Video YouTube channel every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 3 p.m. PT, and then on my own YouTube channel. Just search my name. Whole bunch of stuff comes up there, like my Wild Rose review.
Yes, and Nemiroff is spelled N like a Nancy, E-M like a man, N-E-M-I-R-O-F-F. F, not S. F like in Frank. Okay? Cool. I just wanted to get the spelling right because sometimes things sound one way and you go to spell it and that's not what it is.
You can also say Nemiroff like the vodka.
Oh, and then there's that. And Perry with two R's. So there's that. And of course, you can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. You can find me right after this over at General Hospital at AfterBuzz TV doing the after show. And then a little while after that, you'll find me back over at AfterBuzz TV doing the after show about American Princess on Lifetime. And we got two special guests in studio today, Miss Mary Hollis and Deone Collins, who's also doing double duty over at General Hospital. So I'm here all day, you guys. What can I say? And next week, we'll be here talking about Stuber and The Farewell. So have a happy 4th of July. If you're celebrating Pride Month, I hope you had a happy, wonderful, joyous, celebratory Pride Month. And I will see y'all next week here at The Curvy Critic at Black Hollywood Live. Love, peace, and hair grease. Deuces.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.